Hello and welcome to The Comedian's Comedians, the programme in which the people who make us laugh most talk about the people who most make them laugh. Today's giant among jokers, today's Goliath among gagsters, today's comic provokes these plaudits.
A huge amount is owed to him.
People still say, yeah, he didn't really do much. Yeah, but when he chose to, you know, he still blew everyone else out of the water.
He was our most intelligent comedian we've ever had.
They're describing the man who created E.L. Wistie, the idiot philosopher, Sir Arthur Streeg Griebling, the idiot aristocrat, and Dud's mate Pete, the idiot... idiot.
Try and think of this old brown mahogany wardrobe as your mother.
Well, it's a bit tricky. But I suppose those two knobs on the door are reminiscent. And, of course, those huge creaky drawers ring a bell.
You have accepted, then, that this is your mother.
Done.
This is your mother. Now then, next step, let's get you conceived. Be upstanding. Now then. It's Saturday night. Fulham have won the cup. Your father's been at the Green Chartreuse, and suddenly, the miracle of life occurs. Kindly enter your mother's womb. Come on, get in here. Assume a fetal position.
I can't assume anything else in here.
You're in your mother's room. How does it feel?
Dreadful. It's full of old socks and Macintoshes.
Put the socks and Macintoshes out of your mind. Now, it's 9 months before you're born. We won't take that literally, otherwise we'll be here all night. Now, 9 months to lift off. Beginning counting. 0 minus 8. Looking good, Dad.
Feeling dreadful, Pete.
0 minus 7. 0 minus 6.
Arms and legs forming, Pete.
0 minus 5. 0 minus 4. Heart and pulse satisfactory.
0 minus 3. Beginning to kick about a bit.
0 minus 2.
Facial characteristics forming.
Oh, my God. 0 minus 1.
I like it here.
0, we have lift out.
I don't want to come out. It's nice and warm in here.
0 plus 1, you're overdue.
I don't want to come out. It's nice and safe.
0 plus 1, come out, you little sod. You're 2 months overdue.
Said, come out, you little sod. No wonder I
want
to get back in.
Oh,
what'd you do that for?
This was to get your breathing going, of course. Found your lucky stars, you're not Jewish.
Peter Cook, the first to prostrate himself at Cook's feet, is Eric Idle.
I think my big turning point in comedy was somewhere around 1962, early. I went to see Beyond the Fringe in London. I never knew you were allowed to be that funny. You know, it was just spectacularly funny. And about subjects which were not in the normal range of comedy, Peter Cook got up and it was somehow shocking. He mocked Harold Macmillan. And now we take it for granted. You know, we're so used to politicians being abused and sent up. It was absolutely not done. The idea of attacking the Prime Minister of England at the time was just not even conceivable. And then was Cook's just brilliant E.L. Wistie type people, you know, I haven't got the Latin, which is just wonderful stuff.
Yes, I could have been a judge, but I didn't have the Latin. One day I went along to the assizing place and I said, excuse me, I want to be a judge. They said, clear off, you haven't got the Latin. So I come back 5 minutes later on a different tack. I said, excuse me, I am already a judge. I have mislaid my robes. Let me get in on with the sentencing. And they said, clear off, you're the same stupid old nit who pestered his father. And so I never became a judge because of my inability, I suppose, was at the root of it. My complete inability to become a judge stood in my way, rearing itself up against me, and I never became a... Did you notice, for no apparent reason, very suddenly I went, ah! It's an impediment I got from being down the mine. Because one day I was walking along all in the dark, ah! And I came across the body of a dead pit pony. Ah! I went, and ever since then I've been going, ah! Unexpectedly, and that's another reason why I couldn't be a judge. It would destroy the dignity of the court, you see. because some people find this distressing impediment amusing and laugh at my hopeless whooping. My hopeless whooping, instead of raising sympathy and donations of money, gets titters. So I might be up there one day in the court all regally garnered with all the black hat on me, and I might be saying, I sentence you to... You see, the trouble is, under British law, that would have to stand.
I think he's a hero to all young comedians just because he was so effortlessly funny.
Arthur Smith.
Peter Cook could only really do well. He couldn't dance, he couldn't sing, he couldn't act, he couldn't do all sorts of things, but what he could do was be brilliantly funny at the drop of a hat.
On form, I think he's probably one of the funniest people I've ever heard.
Bill Bailey.
In certain interviews, he was just sparkling. I remember seeing him on Parkinson, and all the other guests are all, like, you know, in hysterics. And I remember him just, he looked at the camera, totally deadpan, said, I haven't said anything remotely amusing. And he hadn't. But when you see something like that as a comedian, that's something you really aspire to. Just the ability to be funny rather than having to rely on just material all the time. He just came on and was himself.
The first time I saw Peter Cook was on, what was the show? Was it Revolver or something else? One of those sort of late 70s punky type programmes.
Mark Lamar.
And he wasn't particularly good on it, but he really didn't care. That's probably why the show wasn't very good, but also why he attracted me in the first place. You know, he would say, you know, introducing a band, and he'd say, here's another load of crap. And it's something I've always dreamed of doing. I couldn't, you know, comedy doesn't mean that much to me that I would hurt a band that was on. But yeah, listening to him with Dudley Moore, who really isn't up with him, but is the perfect foil. You know, people always say, well, Morecambe would have been nothing without Wise. Of course he would. He would have been Eric Morecambe, and Ernie Wise would only have been Ernie Wise. And I think Dudley Moore is only Dudley Moore, but Peter Cook's Peter Cook.
Stella, my love, would you send in the next auditioner, please? Mr. Spigot, I believe it is. Mr. Spigot?
Yes, Spigot by name, Spigot by nature.
Oh,
good.
Yes. Well, if you'd like to remain motionless for a moment. Now, Mr. Spigot, you are auditioning, are you not? For the part of Tarzan.
Right.
Now, Mr. Spigot, I couldn't help noticing almost at once that you are a one-legged person.
You noticed that?
When you've been in the business as long as I have, Mr. Spigot, you get to notice these little things almost instinctively. Now, Mr. Spigot, you, a one-legged man, are applying for the role of Tarzan.
Right.
A role that traditionally involves the use of a two-legged actor.
True.
And yet you, a unidexter, for the role.
Definitely.
A role for which two legs would seem to be the minimum requirement. Well, Mr. Spigot, need I point out to you where your deficiency lies as regards landing the role?
Yes, I think you ought to.
Need I say with overmuch emphasis that it is in the leg division that you are deficient?
The leg division?
The leg division, Mr. Spigot.
The leg division.
The leg division. You are deficient in it to the tune of one. Your right leg, I like your right leg. It's a lovely leg for the role. That's what I said when I saw it come in. I said, lovely leg for the role. Leg for the role. I've got nothing against your right leg. The trouble is, neither of you.
Yeah, that line about I've got nothing against your right leg, trouble is neither of you, is probably one of the most famous comic lines delivered since the war, I would say. One of the good things about that very famous sketch is really, in a way, it's just Peter Cook saying, you've only got one leg in about 25 different ways. Which is, I know it's Monty Python used that a lot as well, a bit like the famous parrot sketch, which is really John Cleese finding a number of different, increasingly comical ways of saying, this parrot is dead. But the other thing about that sketch is that whilst it has this brilliant verbal sophistication, also going on the whole time is Dudley Moore straining to stay on one leg and hopping back and forth, and that's part of the joy of it. It combines verbal felicity with the physical joke of a man just hopping about the stage. Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, it was quite clear who the funny one was. Dudley Moore would have a few funny lines, but really you knew that the driving force behind it was Peter Cook.
You know, I've got pictures in my head of, you know, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore corpsing all the time on television and them doing Thunderbirds and singing Goodbye.
Lenny Henry.
And I used to listen to Paul Burnett on Radio 1 at lunchtimes, and he would always play the piano teacher and father and son. Get out of my house! Don't be silly, father, this is my house. Well, get out of your house, then! You know, he would play all those tracks, and they're deeply embedded in my mind, you know, and I know them backwards.
Every word you say is a stab in the back. Every gesture, every look you make is a thorn in my side.
Father, there's no need for you to come down the King's Road, too. I could do perfectly well without you.
Oh, perfectly well without you, my boy. Rosie, did we in our moment of joy spawn this werewolf, this Beelzebub?
I don't know why you keep looking upwards when you mention Mother. You know perfectly well she's living in Frinton with a sailor.
Terrible thing to say. That's a bloody terrible thing to say. Soap and water. Do you think my wife would have left me? Do you think your mother would have left me? She loved me as I loved her. Good Lord. Do you think your mother would have gone off to live with some dirty matelot in Frinton? She worshipped the ground I walked on.
She liked the ground, but she didn't care for you, Father.
Oh, she didn't care for you, you, my boy. Now then, she's gone up there to the great sir in the sky, the biggest drain of them all. All you can do is make this place into a sin cellar. Yeah, you're nothing but a whore. You're a whore. Get out of my house. Get out of my house.
Father, it's not your house, it's my house.
Oh, pardon me for living. Pardon me for having two strong, sturdy legs to stand on. Well, get out of your house.
God, I could listen to that clip on a daily basis forever. And there are quite a lot of their clips, even some of the stuff they did in Beyond the Fringe, which mostly I find a little bit too clever for its own good. But, you know, the great train robbery sketch from that is fantastic.
Who do you think may have perpetrated this awful crime?
We believe this to be the work of thieves.
And, I'll tell you why. The whole pattern is extremely reminiscent of past robberies where we have found thieves to be involved. The telltale loss of property, the snatching away of the money substances, it all points to thieves.
So you feel that thieves are responsible?
Good heavens, no. I feel that thieves are totally irresponsible. They're ghastly people who go around snatching your money.
I appreciate that, sir.
You may appreciate that, but most people don't. If you like money snatched, you must be rather an odd fish, I think.
Who do you think is behind the criminals?
We are, considerably.
Peter Cook, in a way, is, I suppose, what all comics dream of being. You know, most comics dream of being a Flann O'Brien, Peter Cook type character. Someone that just doesn't care, doesn't work, doesn't write, just gets up and does it and is fantastic. And I think in his case that was the truth. Yeah, you can see him in those Not Only But Also, is where he is ad-libbing, and Dudley Moore's losing it because he's being so funny when he's ad-libbing. And I think he was just an absolute natural, you know. It's a shame and it makes you want to give up, but I think that was the case.
It does seem to me as if the whole venture of the Frog and Peach has been a little disastrous.
Oh. I don't think I'd use the word disastrous, yeah?
No.
I think catastrophic will be nearer the mark. The whole thing has been a total failure and a huge catastrophe.
Do you feel you've learned from your mistakes?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. I have learned from my mistakes, and I'm sure I could repeat them exactly.
Thank you, Sir Arthur Green Stevens.
Please do.
some teachers put on a review, and they did Frog and Peach.
Al Murray.
It's like, what on earth is this? This is absolutely bonkers, but it works and is a completely compelling lunatic. I think it's Strieb Griebling. It's completely compelling because he's not going to deviate from this idea and he knows he's heading for ruin. And it's obvious from the very outset the man's mad and you see it through and it's just gorgeous. And that's an interesting thing is, you know, compared to, say, Morecambe and Wise as a double act, Cook and Moore pretended to be common and Morecambe Wise pretended to be posh, and you've got these two aspirational things, or whatever, going in opposite directions. Just, you know, the guys in the art gallery are two Joes, and Morecambe Wise are always trying to be, or especially Ernie Wise is trying to, like, be smarter than he is. And that's an interesting thing. That says, I think, a lot about, you know, the 60s and the 70s or whatever, people's social aspirations.
Have you seen that bloody Leonardo da Vinci cartoon?
No.
I couldn't see the bloody joke. Went down there, nothing.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, Peter, a sense of humour must have changed over the years,
of
you know.
It has. That's why it's not funny.
No. I bet when that da Vinci cartoon first came out, I bet people were killing themselves. Yeah. I bet old da Vinci had an accident when he done it.
Yeah. But it's difficult to see the joke, just that lady sitting there with the children round her. It's not much of a joke as far as I'm concerned.
No, well, apart from that, Pete, it's a different culture. It's Italian, you see.
We don't
understand it. I mean, for instance, the mousetrap did terribly in Pakistan.
No, I didn't know that. Another thing we've wasted money on is that bloody Cezanne, Grande Baigneuse. Yeah. Have you seen that load of rubbish?
No.
It's over there.
Oh,
there,
yeah.
There it is, those fat nude ladies with their bottoms towards you.
Yeah.
That's Le Grande Baigneuse. You know what it means, don't you?
What's it?
Big bathers.
Is that all?
That's all it means, yeah. Big bathers. 500,000 quid we pay for that. Those nude women come out of our pocket, Dad.
Yeah. Works out about £50,000 a body, doesn't it?
Well, you could get the real nude ladies over there for that price.
Yeah. My Aunt Dolly would have done it for nothing.
She does anything for nothing, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She'll be an old cow. You enjoying that, Sammy? Mine's appalling, I'll tell you that much. It's worse than the paintings, my family.
Yeah. Talk to that, Pete. You can't tell.
I know, you've just seen the Leonardo da Vinci joke, have you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's marvellous. I mean, there's everything in there. There's sort of satire of the art world, of people's ideas about art, of... there's naughty jokes as well. It's just everything, and they could just spin the whole thing all at once, and it also sounds fresh and everything, and just brilliant. There's no double acts like that. I don't think there have been since that have got that improvisation free will. You know, people think improvisation now is think of a household object, but like that. But it, in their case, it came from, the spontaneity was from vast preparation.